You're listening to the Hollywood Saloon.
The following quotes are from actual critics across America and do not express the opinions of the podcasters of this show. However, they might express the exact opinions of the podcasters of this show. Listen at your own risk.
We knew it would be dumb, but we had no idea it would be so much dumb fun.
In this tricked-out retake on the 1980s cartoon about alien robots that morph into vehicles, director Michael Bay brings his chest-thumping, combustive bombast along with some clever pacing and a generally sappy wit.
Transformers is smart enough to know how incredibly stupid it is.
It's not all stupid and not all loud. Near the end, it gets somewhat stupid and extremely loud.
The visual effects are marvelous, and the acting is better than it needs to be in a film of this nature.
Every time the Transformers threatens to collapse under the weight of its ridiculous plot and boring characters, Bay and his team pull a visual trick that will blow many summer movie fans' minds.
It's the summertime and everybody's chilling.
The summer.
It's summertime. Sweet summertime.
Yes, folks. You just heard actual quotes from critics across the country talking about that new hit comedy film, The Transformers.
Hey, fun for the whole family, right? I can bring the kids, right? I don't have to worry about stuff like, you know, masturbation jokes or too many, you know, of those hoochie-coo shots.
Not in a Steven Spielberg production. Are you crazy?
Oh, that's right. It's Steven Spielberg, of course. What was I worried about?
All right. Hey, guys, what's going on? I'm Andy. Over there in California is my partner, Mr. John Jansen.
Hello. Welcome, everybody.
Today, we're talking about something very near and dear to us, something that's going on, something that we're currently suffering through or living through. It's what you're looking at in the theaters right now, and we're going to call this thing, what are we calling this thing? The Summer Pass?
The Summer Pass.
All right. What is this, this word that we've invented? What is the Summer Pass?
Well, I would say go look at the reviews of Spider-Man 3, and anyone that gives it a really glowing review or a good review is giving it a pass.
Right.
Because, well, if you're unsure what our opinions are on the movie, there's an hour and a half waiting for you. No, I just don't see how some of these films that have been coming out in succession, and it's not just Spidey, but I don't know. What do you think? You've seen them all, too.
Yeah, I think what we're looking at, really, is this idea of basically getting used to the idea of summer movies and this thing that certain movies you don't have to turn your brain on. You know, you've heard this quote before where people say, look, you'll have a good time. Just turn your brain off at the door. I think what we're looking at in the year 2007 is we're looking at a number of films that were either just kind of milquetoast, just kind of middle of the road, or even flat out bad, where critics and the public at large are coming out and saying, look, you need to relax, step back, quit coming with your big heavy-handedness, expecting this thing to be the next Apocalypse Now, the next Godfather. You know, you can't go in with the same mind to see Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, as you do when you walk into a big heavy drama. You have to bring in new eyes. Instead of saying, yeah, the film sucks, they're saying you don't have competent enough eyes to look at it in the way that it was intended. So basically, that's a defense you can give to any movie. I mean, you could say that about Weekend at Bernie's 2 if you wanted to. You could just say, look, when watching Weekend at Bernie's 2, you sit back, get your popcorn. Don't bring your same way that you look at movies to this. These movies are special. Basically, it makes movies critic-proof. And do you think Hollywood doesn't like that? They love that. Because then there's really no bad movies unless something just gets completely universally panned across the board.
Well, then you have, you know, your Geely factors and all that.
It's Geely, by the way.
Right. That's the press working against a movie. I mean, whenever you have these super bombs like that, they have to be press pushed
sure.
in so many ways. There's just no way to build up that kind of myth and legend without the press completely, you know, behind it all.
You want to watch Baywatch?
Let's look at the movies that are in theaters this summer. Because I think this summer, see, the hard part is knowing, are we the ones who are projecting this onto this summer? Or is this something that we've seen in the past time and time again, where the highest grossing films of the summer are ones that are just really god-awful films, and somehow they're getting some sort of either critical pass or a pass in the community of filmgoers that's just saying, you know, stop, you don't need to bring your heavy-hitting criticism to these films?
Well, I think what happens is a lot of historians like to point to the summer of 1975.
Mm.
And with Jaws, the summer blockbuster, ooh, Jaws. But the problem is how can you knock Jaws?
Right.
You could have released Jaws at Christmas. It still would have been an enormous hit. But that really wasn't the best time to release Jaws. I mean, really.
Well, Jaws worked perfectly as a summer movie, obviously, because it was about summertime. It was about summer break. It was about...
Exactly. But if it would have came out at Thanksgiving, it still would have been a big hit. Because it was a great movie.
Right. See, that's the deal. A good movie is a good movie whenever.
And that's what I'm saying. It wouldn't have made sense to release Jaws any other time. So just by nature of the material and the type of movie it was, Jaws became the summer movie mold, okay? The big blockbuster that can make $100 million and that people will go see 5 and 6 times.
Well, what's really silly is that now you're getting these movies that are deemed summer movies. I mean, it's like they're saying, we're going to define this movie because of the time during the year when it's released. Like, there's a different mindset. Yeah, I know kids are out of school and whatnot, but what? In the summer, we're all fucking stupid, and in the winter, we all have our thinking caps on. What are we watching movies at the beach in the beach chairs? You know, I mean, put the screen up, dear.
It is weird how that programming happened. You have the early part of the year, the January, February, which is the dump month. You know, actually, January's dump month. February has turned into sort of like romantic comedy month. March is that weird eclectic. April is that pre-summer movie that's not quite big enough for
summer.
Get it
in before the big boys get in there, right?
Yeah. They're going to get in with their quick buck.
Yeah.
And, you know, it runs generally through August, and then you have your fall back to school or, you know, back to fall movies. But the prestige movies come out in the fall because Oscar voting has always leaned heavier on movies that came out late. So everyone was saving those type of movies to the fall. So that's a programming schedule that's been in place for 25, almost 30 years.
Right.
Really, since Jaws, that mindset has just been a comfort zone. But what has been proven time and time again is there's always exceptions to the rule.
Sure.
And you can always break them at any time when you least suspect it. But it's unfair to beat up on Jaws because Jaws is a solid movie.
Right.
It still works today, I think, extremely well. And it's very character orientated. You just can't give it that dumb pass. I think the movie goes to a lot of lengths to balance out the three major leads and to give them each a unique position dramatically in the quest for the shark.
Well, and like I said, I think what you're seeing is over those years since Jaws was released and really became the first big summer-type movie, and the studios are tailoring this slate of films specifically during these summer months. Jaws started it, but Star Wars solidified it. You know, it made it absolutely a real thing.
Well, in the same month as Star Wars, you have New York, New York and Sorcerer coming out. Which means you have old 70s cinema fighting this new 70s cinema, which is the big entertainment picture for the family. Mm-hmm. And I guess you would qualify Jaws like that in a way.
Well, but is release date really like so important for a film. I think sometimes it can be when it's a smaller film going up against a larger film or a film that has a lot of recognition, like when we saw Star Trek Nemesis come up against Two Towers. You know, that was really a stupid mistake on Paramount's part.
Oh yeah, they released that same film in February.
Right.
They can add an extra $10 million to their opening weekend.
Right. But is it absolutely essential that a film like, say, Ratatouille comes out in the middle of the summertime?
Well, the Pixar did that for financial reasons because they used to have the November slot.
Right.
You know, as Disney has always proven works for family entertainment. But the problem with Pixar is the films would come out in November, but the DVD would hit in May, which is in two different fiscal quarters in years. So they figured if it comes out in summer, the DVD comes out in fall or Christmas, and they're all in the same fiscal year. So the profits for the same film is generated in that year.
The basic idea is that with certain films, I think, like we said before, as with Jaws, you could release it anytime. Ratatouille, notwithstanding their fiscal year.
Well, I still think Ratatouille can still work in Thanksgiving.
Of course
Christmas,
it could.
Whenever. Yeah, definitely.
And really, I mean, can just about any of these films, yet they're still deemed summer movies.
What about Smokey and the Bandit? 77, right after Star Wars. It came out, what, in June?
Right.
Well, that's an ideal summer movie. I mean, kids are out of school, teenagers, college students. It's just sort of the fun, let loose, tear ass kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would it have worked in the fall? Probably, yeah. Just like Fast Times kind of worked in late fall, summer, fall.
I don't know that I buy into the title summer movie, that a movie is defined by when it is released. To me, it should be more than that. And you know, I think that the studios have given into that too. And they're saying, well, this is a particular type of film that has to come out at this type of year because it will only work at this time of year. You know, you can only put out a Spider-Man movie in the summer. It would never play in October.
Only in May. And like the Mummy movies, only in May?
Right. I mean, what is that? I mean, that's just really silly to me, but I guess looking at what we're talking about now, why is it worse now than it was in the past? And I went through and I pulled a really monstrous list here, going all the way back to 1980, of the top five films released during the summer of that year. And I'm not talking about for the whole year. I'm talking about that were released during the summer,
okay,
to kind of see what we're looking at. Okay,
and what the quality was like. This is what they were throwing out because by then, Star Wars had solidified the blockbuster. And Grease the next summer came out in the summer. You know, 78 was Grease and Jaws 2.
Now, I think that, you know, for the most part, what we're saying is right, but there's still those things in there that, you know, I guess you could call them a summer pass that, you know, weren't that great. But I mean, 1980, you've got Empire Strikes Back, you've got Airplane, you've got Smokey and the Bandit 2. You know, you've got Blue Lagoon. You know, and then you've got Blues Brothers.
Okay, so I give that a 3-2 record.
Right. So two of them got a pass.
Two got two passes for 1980.
Blue Lagoon, come on.
Now jump up to 2007. What are the top five grossing summer movies?
Well, 2007, you've got Spidey 3, Shrek 3, Pirates of the Caribbean 3.
Okay, no, I won't give that one a pass. I thought it was, I liked it.
Transformers.
Pass.
And then Potter.
We're still giving passes to what, 3, 4?
Well, hold on.
Almost.
If I keep going down the list, after that is Ratatouille, then Knocked Up, then Fantastic
Four. Well, all the good
Four.
Ones come after that.
Well,
so.
Fantastic Four 2, then Die Hard 4, then Ocean's 13. That's your top 10 right there. Now, here's the interesting thing. We're seeing that movies kind of get a pass, but what are they in the Rotten Tomatoes? You know, because Rotten Tomatoes, if you don't know, obviously is where they combine all critical scores together into one, and sometimes it's, you know, 100 plus critics, and they try to get a percentage there. Spidey 3 is at 61%. I mean, that's just 1% over Rotten.
So 1% over Rotten. Okay.
1% over Rotten. So it's not that they're really giving, the critical isn't giving it a pass. But
no, I think it should be much lower. Don't you think it should be like in the 40s?
Well, I think so, but I think that, you know, when you compare it to Spider-Man 1 and 2, which were in the 90s, it's a whole different ballgame.
I see. They're doing the C-.
Right.
They're not giving it a D.
Right. Well, look at this, though. Shrek 3, 42%.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, but I believe it.
Pirates of the Caribbean 3, 45%. Which I was, you know, I liked Pirates of the Caribbean 3 myself.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I
liked it actually better than part 2.
I really love the Leone touches, so, yeah. I mean.
Transformers, 57%. So it's not really getting a pass, but there's some insane comments going on. I mean, check this out. Okay, Transformers. Now, granted, you guys don't know how we feel about it. It was a film this summer we were actually able to see together here in Houston. And we walked away really, really, we were shocked, to be honest with you. Because we knew it was going to be bad, but we had no idea.
Well, I was kind of hoping, since we don't get to see films together that often,
right,
that we could have fun at a bad movie. You know, you're going into it in a midnight movie fashion, to where you're just going in for the entertainment and the vibe and to laugh with a friend. I remember you turned to me and like 30 minutes in and you said, man, this is walk out bad.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I think it's devised itself. And in our opinion, I know that it's kind of like, look, if you don't grow up with the nostalgia of the toys, you're screwed on this thing. I mean, really, I can't see it offering anything other than that, unless you just want to see a special effects reel.
I don't think they did a service to the people that do like the toys, because think of if your favorite toy was the Iron Giant and you saw Brad Bird's film of the Iron Giant.
Right.
That's a movie about a giant robot and a boy, and it completely works. I don't look at it and slap my head and think, God, that's so idiotic.
Well, but you know what? Here's one thing across the board that everyone agrees on, is that the special effects were fantastic. And
but what is that saying in 2007? I mean, after Gollum, really?
Yeah.
You know, after the opening shot of Revenge of the Sith, what are you trying to tattoo into my forehead again? You know?
Right.
I get it. Effects are great, and they're always getting better. They're always a little bit better than they were last year.
But for the guys who grew up with that, just seeing Optimus Prime come to life with the same voice they saw in the cartoon, I think that's enough almost in itself. And you can't knock it. You know, sometimes some of the fights are cool and the effects are cool. And I think that's almost good enough. And that's part of the brainwashing that's going on in Hollywood. It's almost like movie conditioning. You know, we're being taught and again to lower your expectations and just turn your brain off at the door.
Well, because it's summer, right?
Because it's summer, and this is a popcorn summer movie, and it's
about... Well, I disagreed, too, what you said, that whole sum of thing, because while I love the idea of seeing these live-action Transformers, and I think some of the transformations are really a kick to watch.
Right.
When I can see them, again, I don't think the filmmaking serviced the story or the property very well at all. There was one moment in the film where it was like the camera was at the end of this street, and I saw this like action fight between two robots, and there was no cut and there was no camera movement, but it was only for like 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the best 4 or 5 seconds in the whole movie, because I could see it. I just was watching the action, and it looked great, and because, you know, the size of the building gave it scale. But all the other stuff, I don't know, to me it obscures great artwork that went into the creation of these robots.
Mm-hmm.
When you're adding so much technique on the shaky cam and the quick cutting, to where you're really obscuring from just sitting back and watching the awesomeness of the effect. So to me, I had some problems with the way a lot of them were photographed and the choices editorially.
But the point is that this film was made in the summer movie mold, in the mold of turning your brain off, in the move of eating your popcorn and having this supposed good time at the expense of plot, character, acting, all that. That's why Michael Bay was obviously the perfect person in their eyes to make this film.
So we're acknowledging that we could have made a Transformers film with plot and with character that could have worked, but
sure,
we chose to make this instead. That's what you're saying.
Well, of course.
There's a logical choice here. We don't want to make the Iron Giant version of Transformers, something with maybe a heart and soul or with some really kick-ass action to give
no.
it that. We don't want that. Okay. I'm confused because I see all these Transformer fans, and it seems like that's the film they might like to have.
You know, if anything, haven't you learned your lesson from Hulk? I mean, Hulk was the penultimate film. You cannot make a big, hard-hitting, intelligent film. I'm not including the last third of the film, but you're not allowed to do that in this kind of a summer fare. If you do, you get screwed. And you
so
get thrown
you're saying
out the
if Hulk came out like in the fall, it would have been a different story? Maybe if Hulk would have came out in October, November, would it have been different?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not championing it as a great, great, great film. I'm just saying that.
But it wouldn't have the summer stigma, though.
Right?
Are we getting at this summer stigma thing as long with this summer pass? I mean, I know this conversation splintering and morphing, but I mean, think about that. T2.
Mm-hmm.
That's a summer movie, and it delivers. It delivers on plot. It's smart. The action is great. The effects are groundbreaking. And you don't come out of that thinking, I'll give it a pass. Like you would walk out of Universal Soldier 2 or something.
Right. But I think we need to demystify the whole thing of summer movie. I mean, to me, I think it's a ridiculous label that needs to be gone. Because I don't believe that if a movie is well enough made, that it can do better at a given time of year, as opposed to if a movie is really bad, it can do better in a given time of year. You know, I think Transformers would make the same money in October that it's making now. I just think that people wanted that nostalgia. You know, and the point is that really you're kind of seeing something very similar that happened in Star Wars, the flip side of what happened in Phantom Menace. It's like people enjoyed pieces of Phantom Menace but hated pieces. And then walked out saying, this movie sucks. I hated this movie. But at the same time, they flipped the script on Transformers, and they're saying, okay, yeah, a lot of this was some really moronic, stupid shit. But seeing Optimus Prime and Jazz and all and
what's up,
all
bitches?
Transformers. Yeah, exactly. Transform into real life. My toy, you know, has come to life in the real world. That's good enough to deem the whole movie a great experience. You know? The point is that what we're simply doing and what society is doing and being taught to do by the studios is to just give these things a pass. We're labeling the summer pass, but you could just say the stupid pass if you want to. I mean, you could say anything. They don't want to invest the money and the time in the script. They would rather spend the money after the fact on effects, because effects can plug any hole, right? You got a big hole in the middle of your script, just plug it in with just let Industrial Light and Magic plug that big hole. Writers are out these days. Who's the star of a movie? Is the writer the star of the movie today? No. Industrial Light and Magic is the star of the movie, especially a movie like Transformers and Spider-Man 3.
So why make Transformers 2 hours and 25 minutes or whatever? Why not just cut that thing down lean to 116 minutes? I mean, why all the subplots? And it's not necessary. It doesn't elevate the movie emotionally anymore by having the hacker subplot and, you know, the hot chick hacker and all the John Turturro and the military and all the John Voight. I mean, if you stripped all that out of the movie, it wouldn't hurt the movie. I mean, I think it would help the movie, actually. You could just focus the plot into a little bit more streamlined to where you're getting all the same kind of action, but without all the bloated mess that has to go around it.
Well, you know, I mean, you're probably seeing the first draft of a film, maybe, or you're seeing a film that, you know, they said, well, this is good enough, and we need to get a lot of people in there, and we need to have a military, and we need to have this, and we need to have comedy.
But, I mean, ultimately, if that's the best that they could get on any given day, I think you could get in there in fan edit style and really just trim all of that nonsense out and make what could be at least a more engaging summer movie. Because to me, it wore out its welcome for a summer movie. It wasn't where we could just sort of giggle, you know, and we were laughing out loud to each other.
Well, the plot of the story that they kind of told us it was about was a boy and his robot, right? That's what they led us to believe. And then these rabbit holes appeared out of nowhere. The guys in the desert having to keep fighting the Scorpion Transformer or whatever. Excuse me, I don't know the Transformers' names. The plot with the scientist chick who happened to be ragingly hot, who knew or one of her good friends was the best hacker in the world. You know?
It's always the best, isn't it?
It's always the best.
In a Michael Bay movie, nothing else will do.
It's simply the best. So, but all that side stuff going on and all the stuff with John Turturro and, I mean, I guess you have to bring in that entity of their of the Black Ops guys. That's fine, the Men in Black type characters. You know, but it, did he have to be so damn annoying and so funny and ha-ha jokes and let's have some jokes?
I disagree. I don't think you need to go there. I just think it's all been done, and you're coming in like as a fourth-string quarterback by doing it now. I just think it's kind of tired. See, I don't know if... I mean, I realize the whole Megatron in captivity comes from some plot line or some cartoon or whatever. You know, that's fine in season two or three of the show or whatever, okay? But for the first big Transformer movies, it's just we don't need it. It's unnecessary baggage. Megatron shows up on Earth, there's a battle. That's it. Megatron likes Earth, wants it for himself. We can keep it simple. I just, I felt like all of that stuff was just dragging the film out to get to its inevitable battle.
Well, sure, and the problem is the film has Roland Emmerich syndrome. It's like Independence Day. You've got your military, you've got your government leaders, you've got your side people, your everyday person, your regular people that are involved. You know, I mean, it's really, you got all those little things, and they're trying to give these little subplots. And really, if they would have just focused on the Shia LaBeouf story, that's where the interesting story was. Forget all the other stuff. You can even have Shia LaBeouf and his hot girlfriend. That's fine. Everything else is where it's head slap, shovel to the face, punched in the nuts, stupid. That's the thing that kills you. It's like, you know, trim it all down to just the Shia stuff. Even as dumb as some of it is with the whole robots hiding from the parents, it's funny because, you know, rather than being derivative of Spielberg, it's derivative of Roland Emmerich, you know. And
Of all things
but you don't want to be.
I was not a big fan of War of the Worlds either. I think it suffered from similar scripting issues, but there's less case of the stupids in War of the Worlds than there is in this one. And I can follow the action a little bit better.
The point is that, you know, across the board, like I said, Transformers got 57%, which I think is nice from the critics.
Oh, that's a pass.
You know what I mean? But
okay, so is it a C movie? Does it pass or does it flunk in your book?
Oh, no. It's
What grade do you give it? Let's just go. Let's go to the education route.
I give it like a really like almost a D minus, maybe even an F, because I think anything that's good in the film is destroyed by all the little stupid moronic subplots. You know, the fact that you know, John Voight is taking himself so damn seriously, and then yet there's other people who aren't taking it seriously at all. You know, we see all the stuff with the black hacker guy, you know, eating donuts and stuff, you know, and saying, she did it. I mean, what is that stupidity? And it has nothing to do with anything. They never give any of these characters any kind of closure. They're just there for what reason? I mean, it doesn't even make sense. It's things like that that destroy everything else. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I like Transformers too. I think they look cool when they transform and when they fight. But that can't cover up this ridiculous plot. You know, remember the guy sliding underneath the robot, and he jumps off the motorcycle. Forget road rash, forget your flesh getting completely ripped off your skin, knowing that instead of rolling he would completely slide under the robot and shoot the robot where? In the robot testicles? I mean, what?
And it works,
and it brings him down. Hey, all you gotta do is shoot him in where they should have nuts.
Shoot him in the bolts or the whatever,
you know. So, and I think that that's the problem. And to me personally, I can't get over just the enormous, you know, if there was a little bit of here and there and a little bit of guffaw here and there, you know, I thought it was kind of funny when one of the robots opened up his valve and it looked like he was pissing on Totoro or whatever, you know. It's like, okay, I get a, you know, there's a, you get a little laugh there or something.
Your 10-year-old son gets a laugh.
Oh, yeah. Okay? Well, that's fine. And, you know, I'm not, you know, 80 years old here or anything, but I think what I'm saying is that it's fine for a little humor, but this just went over the top, and the action was just, you know, what we said is the case of the stupids, over the top, slap stupid. And I think that I was surprised by that. You expressed that you were extremely surprised by that. We knew that it was probably not going to be good, but I think in the back of our heads we had hope that maybe Michael Bay might do a little bit of redemption to his sullied past.
Well, I just think it was a step down from Bad Boys 2. I thought his direction... I'm not talking script or acting, but Michael Bay as director, you know, camera and editing and presentation and blocking and whatnot. I just thought Bad Boys was a lot slicker and better looking. Mm-hmm. and overall better put together than this.
Well, if anything, what I walked away with is saying this is not, you know, where it was, we were hoping that it might be Michael Bay's best, it ended up being Michael Bay's worst.
Yeah, I thought, you know, given the elements and given what I'd seen in the trailers, I thought this very easily could be. I thought he'd be right in the pocket. Just this is exactly perfect kind of movie for him to make, like a Bad Boys.
The effects aren't revolutionary enough and different enough to just get past it for you to say, well, look, if anything...
People need to stop with the Jurassic Park, okay?
Right.
That was 1993. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I lived it. I remember. I remember what movies were like before, and now I remember like it's after. It's like, once you know how the rabbit comes out and that it can be done, mm-hmm. well, you're never going to be that surprised again. Not in the same way. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're still going to see some groundbreaking, revolutionary graphics. I mean, obviously, right. there's still a lot more room to cover.
Sure.
But you can't pull the rug out from us anymore. Because we've seen so much already. We can't be that surprised again and take that kind of giant leap. The next giant leap we're going to take is Avatar.
Right.
When it's all 3D and it's stunning graphics and it's just, it immerses us.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be our next leap that I think has a chance of being a Jurassic Park moment.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, I think this is the best that effects can offer in 2007. And I would say to everyone that worked on the film, damn good job, because those are the people putting in the long hours. It's all the people laboring in those cubicles, getting every single one of those frames right. And there's all kinds of bolts moving around. You know, it is impressive work. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think just for the people that worked on it that can sit back and ignore all the rest of it, there's a lot to enjoy.
But you know what? Speaking about special effects, there's just as impressive special effects in Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
Well, see, and the problem is I didn't work on the film. I'm just the audience. So right. I just want the story, and I want you to use all the tools that are available to me to wow me with your story. And if I'm not wild with the story, then I'm just enjoying your effects reel.
Well, and you could say the same thing for Spider-Man 3. Fantastic Four had some great special effects. And I think somehow we get all of these things mixed up in our heads, and summer has now been defined by the quote-unquote summer movie, and it's mixed in with effects. And if you have a movie that's full of great, incredible special effects, you can get away with what we're calling the summer movie pass, because you go above and beyond criticism. Some people will just say, hey, you know, like I said, check your brain at the door, go in and have a good time. But it's like, look, you know, I can have a good time when I see The Departed. You know, and I could see The Departed in August, June, January, October, whenever. It doesn't matter.
The other point is you can have a good time watching Raiders of the Lost Ark or Back to the Future or, you know, In the Line of Fire, whatever. There's still quality films that can come out during the summer programming. Make better films. What the summer does, you can't ignore the fact that kids are out of school, and that's your bread and butter. And so if the parents drop them off to theater and they might see two or three movies a couple times a week, well, that's, you want that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot gross the same on every film at any time of the year, because you want to maximize who's going to come see your film anyway.
All right, let's have fun here. You ready? 1981, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Superman 2, Arthur, Stripes, Cannonball Run.
Saw them all.
Just give me numbers, 4-1 or 3-2 on pass versus good summer movie versus, you know, failed.
I think they're all good summer movies, aren't they?
I think they're fine, Cannonball Run included.
I mean, maybe you give a pass to that, but that was, I think Cannonball Run's more of a victim of its time, where movies like that were just sort of the common thing, the alternative to the other kind of stuff.
All right, let's keep going. 1982, E.T., Officer and a Gentleman, Rocky III, Star Trek II, Poltergeist. All
Man.
Good. All
Quality's,
good.
That's good quality programming.
All right, 1983, Return of the Jedi, Trading Places, War Games, Octopussy, Staying Alive.
Okay, they're giving a pass to Jedi. All right, let's get that out of the way. That's a summer pass. Whatever its Rotten Tomatoes rating is, it's too high.
Well, Staying Alive, too, so.
Oh, definitely, so Staying yeah. Alive. And I mean, that. I know that's guilty pleasure for some people, but yeah. No, any good review is a pass.
All right, 1984, Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Gremlins,
pass.
Gremlins, The Karate Kid, Star Trek III.
Okay, yeah.
So Indiana Jones, right? Well, give that one a pass. You know, I think a lot of people gave that one a pass. It's like I can't bring myself to say that an Indiana Jones movie was kind of iffy.
Well, and my favorite spin is it's like, well, it's all in the opening song, man. Anything goes.
Anything goes.
Yeah, anything without Kate Capshaw in it.
Anything goes in the movie. If he jumps off out of an airplane with a raft, hey, anything goes.
That's,
he'll survive, right?
It's terrible. All right, here we go. 1985, Back to the Future, Rambo, First Blood 2, Cocoon, Goonies, and Fletch.
Okay. Cocoon's a quality summer movie, right?
Oh, I love Cocoon.
Back to the Future is fantastic entertainment,
sure,
whenever, when it comes out. But the fact that it comes out in summer, to me, elevates what a summer movie is and can be.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, you know, although it wasn't in the top five, you know, Road Warrior in 82 and Blade Runner and The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a lot of others that were also coming out during the summer that are quality films.
And these are only the top
five. Hold
up.
These are library titles.
Right.
You can't escape the fact that that's also what we're talking about. We're talking about films that are going to last.
Right.
Not films that are, I mean, meant to last longer than their 6 weeks in the theater,
right,
but have a true shelf life, like many of these titles that we're mentioning. Rambo 2, pass. It's a dumb movie. I mean,
mm-hmm,
it's the equivalent of probably this one of these summer's dumb movies. But you know what? I went and saw it twice in 85. So I'm just as guilty as all the teenagers today going out to the movies.
Sure.
These things, and I think that's the true test. But I saw Cocoon. I definitely saw that in the theater. I didn't see Goonies in the theater. But what was the other one on there?
Fletch.
Oh, and Fletch. Yeah, I saw Fletch. So,
all right, 1986, Top Gun, Karate Kid 2, Back to School, Aliens, and Ruthless People.
Okay, that's a pretty good slate of movies too. Ruthless People is a funny movie, or at least it was that when I saw it that summer.
I was surprised to see that Aliens was as low as number four for the summer.
You got to remember, Aliens wasn't a blockbuster; it was just a hit,
right?
And that was the difference back then. You had to go over 100 to be a blockbuster.
Yeah, and it made like 80 something.
Yeah, if you were over 60 or 70, you were a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Back to School was enjoyable as a Rodney vehicle. It's a high-concept movie, but it worked.
Great Sam Kinison moment.
Top Gun, bubblegum, all the way.
Yeah, but still not like... I mean, where do you put Top Gun in the middle of this
Top
summer?
Gun is also an important turning point, because Top Gun is... And it's also Return of the Jedi and Temple of Doom, if we're going to get down to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's where... And, you know, some people would say... the comic book plot, but that's a disservice to many comic books out there, but sort of a cartoonish quality plot with some very slick visuals and big explosions, you know, Bond style a la Rambo, or, you know, even Top Gun with all the battle scenes a la Star Wars, you know, dogfights and so forth. There's a formula there, and they started working out this mathematical formula of how to make a hit. And Top Gun is a perfect recipe for that type of thinking. It has a very cartoon plot, but it's very slickly made, and it's enormously entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And you drop that sucker in May, and people go see it 3-4 times during the summer, and recruiting's through the roof in the fall. You know?
Right.
So, it works. But once it works, then it's like, well, okay, well, what's next summer's?
Well, think about it. Next summer's, though... Who directed the next summer's number one movie?
Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Tony Scott. That's right. There you go.
That same formula. Okay, we got to get that Cop 2 sequel
and
going. Let's just keep the same team and keep filming.
Right, but here we go. Think about this. The rest of that summer, number two, Untouchables. Number three, Stakeout. Then Witches of Eastwick, and then Dirty Dancing.
What about Midnight Run? I guess it wasn't that big a hit, huh?
Yeah, not in the top five.
It should be, though, because it should be mentioned. That's a summer movie. And is that as good as anything you've seen in any summer?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I mean, if all summer movies were as good as Midnight Run, then we would have a boring podcast.
Right. We have nothing to bitch about.
So, Untouchables, quality entertainment. You could put that out in the fall. And it would have seemed like a fall movie. But, you know, that's the thing is that was considered a good summer programming movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't matter. It was just a good quality film.
Mm-hmm. 1988, Roger Rabbit, Coming to America, Big, Crocodile Dundee 2,
Ooh.
And Die Hard.
Any good review on Crocodile Dundee 2 is a big pass.
That's one of the worst movies ever, ever made. Yeah,
goodness.
I enjoyed the first one, but yeah.
The first one is the lightning in the bottle. It's a high concept movie that has a lot of charm. I don't know how it would be today for someone seeing it the first time because it's been ripped off and kind of been done and parodied. So nothing is ever as fresh after you go
through
that
grinder. Well, the whole, you know, g'day, shrink mom and the bobby. I mean, that's what really gave us.
Right. It was fresh when it came out.
It gave America a really silly, stereotypical view of Australians that we hung on to.
But it had heart. It had a lot of heart.
Right.
And it worked. That's the whole key thing, is it worked.
But what we're seeing is you got a list of there. You got one movie that sucked, but the rest, I mean, Coming to America is a blast. Big is fun. Die Hard is a classic. Roger Rabbit is an incredible...
Is a work of art.
Is a work of art, exactly. So, I mean,
and yeah,
you know.
Die Hard is a classic. And if Die Hard defined summer entertainment, well, again, that's it's up a notch. I mean, flash forward to 2007.
Yeah.
You saw the new Die Hard, right?
I did.
And what grade did you give it?
C, man. C all the way or lower.
C minus.
Yeah, it was so vanilla plain by the book. And really, it tickled on the edge of being fucking moronic. You know?
I don't know. I was kind of going with the movie for a little bit because, of course, it's always entertaining to watch Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure.
I thought I got bad vibes, to tell you the truth. And, okay, I can hear him groaning out there. But the opening credits...
Right.
Didn't like them. Didn't need them in a Die Hard movie like that. And if you're going to do it, watch the other series. There's a certain Die Hard moment you can get just out of throwing those, you know, two words together on the screen. But to me, all that computer typing on the screen and all that arty-farty credit, it just prolonged getting to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is the moment the T2 statue fell on the keypad.
Mm-hmm.
And it blew up the bad guy. It entered a new realm.
Mm-hmm.
It entered this, lucky chance from McClane. And the other films didn't feel that way.
Well, that's the thing that I hated about this movie, was that more often he was saved by lucky chance than by his skill.
And it's super McClane now.
Yeah.
He's got, like, new digital batteries or something, longer lasting.
If you can survive riding on the back of a jet, jumping off the jet, sliding down, concrete embankments and not hitting the bottom and just your legs being crippled out from underneath you, and then massive explosions going everywhere, and it's like, come on, it's like, you're right.
Even before that stupidity, I just don't think he should have survived jumping out of that car at that speed before it, blew up that helicopter.
Well, that's
a tumble. I mean, I know they showed him in pain, but I just think that would have been
enough. Well, much less that he had perfect aim and knew that the car would go up that embankment and
fly up
that high.
I don't believe the physics of the stunt. That's the problem I have with it. Is if he was up on top of the freeway and he jumped out and it went like crashing off the side and the helicopter was right there and it landed on it, then it's like, okay. But I didn't believe it could do what it did. I mean, yeah, did it look cool? Great. Am I giving it a pass?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why? I mean, based on the laws of the first couple of Die Hard movies, every Die Hard movie has their ridiculous moment. I'll give them that.
Sure,
okay?
Sure.
A moment where you got to sort of put away some sort of realism, because that's not what these films are about. McClane is going to jump off the building with the fire hose, and he's going to be okay, all right? McClane's going to strap himself to that ejector seat, and right before the bomb goes off, he's going to fly up in the air, and that's...
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get up on top of that truck when the water flowing is coming. He's going to spit out up on top just as Sam Jackson drives by. These things just happen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you can nitpick them all you like, but it's still a solid series, and we're grounded at least enough into the character McClane where we do go with it. But it's like I said, when that statue fell on that, it's like, what is so wrong with McClane shooting the guy and then having it fall on it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple logic choice, and one veers the film in a direction that I didn't like. But it's an interesting story. It's an intriguing idea. But ultimately, it's undone by a weak villain on paper. Good actor playing him. He doesn't have much to do. And I think there's a lot more they could have done with Maggie Q as his assistant. it's tough coming into the diehard villain, all right?
Right.
It has been, the mold was set and perfected by the man.
Yep, Alan Rickman.
So after that, everybody else is just coming to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't feel like he had anything. I didn't even like his wardrobe. Overall, not a very engaging protagonist.
Well, and much less, I mean, the other things I can complain about was just the preposterous elevator, you know, the elevator scene where Maggie Q left us way too early. The stuff with the daughter not getting full fulfillment. Remember what I told you? I thought it would be so much more of a satisfying ending. You know, here goes a spoiler alert for you if you haven't seen it yet, but so what? You know, we get the yippee-ki-yay motherfucker moment where McClane pulls the gun and shoots him through his own body.
Yeah, that was really kind of weak.
Which was excessively weak.
I mean, I thought the ending of Vengeance was kind of, you know, weak when he shoots the helicopter.
That was very weak.
It's looking really good now, you know.
Yeah, this one's excessively weak because it's just quick and it's like, you know, not only would he have been killed from that, his shoulder would have been completely blown off. I don't buy the reality of it. And I just think, and it was just so quick and over with. I mean, I think it set itself up. You know, it's like, you bring the daughter in for what reason? We know she's tough. We know she can fight. And then she threatens the bad guy and says, you know, want to go outside and I'll kick your ass or whatever. Why not have the daughter kick the bad guy's ass and just humiliate the shit out of him?
Well, I think they should have given the daughter the line. I know that would probably not make a lot of diehard fans happy, but at least if he says yippee-ki-yay, she can just say motherfucker, you know, and blow him away or something like that.
Well, but at least play that card. I mean, the ending that we got was so just simple, and
she certainly played up as a true McClane.
Well, and the point is that bring it out to fruition. You know, pull a Lethal Weapon. Remember where Danny Glover and Lethal Weapons says, "I'm in control here. Stand back. These guys are going to fight it out." You know,
yeah.
It's like that's the scene I want to see. I want to see her kick that guy's ass and humiliate the shit out of him because that would be more fun than just seeing him get simply blown away through the shoulder.
It was completely set up the moment he hit her, which I thought was a good move on the film.
Right.
I wanted more of that kind of edge from his character. Unfortunately, it wouldn't have
been. Well, but they didn't give fulfillment to her character. You know, it was just gone. And much, much less, they wasted the incredible talents of Ciro Raffaelli on a quick death.
That was really sad because, I mean, it was great when he was jumping off from that helicopter, you know, exploding, and it's really him.
Well, the point is that they need to, when you have someone that's like that, you need to use him to the best of his ability. And, you know, just because they have him in the film doesn't mean that they have the director of B-13. How much more excited would you have been to see that guy direct this movie than Len Wiseman? You know, why didn't he get the call?
Len Wiseman got the call, but how is he any different from any of the guys directing television? You know, James Marshall on Smallville or any of the, you know, David Carsons or any of the guys on 24.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't think he really brought... He didn't bring what McTiernan brought to it.
No, and it didn't feel like a Die Hard movie.
It just felt like a TV show. Like, this is the pilot for the Die Hard TV show. Or this is the final episode of the first season of Die Hard. It felt more like it was in that kind of range. I mean, I like the organic stunts. Don't get me wrong. I always prefer that. But why is this movie getting such praise? Is it because there's no CGI or very little, and that's enough to give it a pass?
Well, that's what I understand. At this point, it's made $127 million as of today. But it got an 80% positive at Rotten Tomatoes. 80%. And to me, that's an incredible pass. So,
I agree. I'm with you. I'm in the C-minus kind of category.
But if that's it, if that's the pass, because people say, hey, this was decent, does that mean, are our expectations now so low that when we see a movie that's kind of like, it was okay, that elevates it to being really good? Is everything else out so watered down and so milquetoast and so bland that when a movie like Live Free, Die Hard comes out, that we elevate it to being some sort of really, really good movie? Hey, you got to see the new Die Hard movie. It's really good. It's like, no, it's not. On that point, let's flip back to our list and continue what we're doing, because what you're seeing is you're seeing a desensitizing effect to what is a good movie and what is a bad movie. Because if we're at 2007 and this movie's getting praise and passes, yet you and I know, or you and I vibe on ourselves that it's really, you know, C minus category or lower.
Or maybe D. I mean, maybe right. It shouldn't even pass. Maybe it should get the D.
All right, but let's go back to our list. You ready? 1989, Batman, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Lethal Weapon 2, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Ghostbusters 2.
Ghostbusters 2 is not very good.
Ghostbusters 2, no. I think Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, well, it's fine because it was unique and it was a good family thing. Lethal Weapon 2 was perfectly good. Last Crusade was perfectly good. Batman, well, that's debatable. I would say it's good.
Well, I didn't give it a positive review back then. I'm still was what 2.5 back then. And I'm
yeah, but I don't know that it. I don't know that it was such a cultural phenomenon. I don't know that it deserves a summer pass like it got special attention. If it did, it was only because it was Batman.
Well, certainly it became beyond a review. It became beyond whether you liked it or not. It became beyond whether or not you wanted to see it or not. You had to see it.
Right.
Because everyone was talking about it. It just became one of those kind of things.
Right.
But it still didn't make it a great movie to me.
Mm-hmm.
I still saw the same flaws in the movie the first time I saw it, the second time I saw it, you know?
Right.
So, but, you know, be that as it may, it worked, right? Whatever they cobbled together, they learned through the whole mold of the synergy of marketing between the mm-hmm. soundtrack and promoting on MTV and, you know, getting the t-shirts out and, you know, all the toys and everything that goes around it. You know, it's manufacturing a blockbuster right. is what Batman is. They had the brand, but they had to manufacture it. They had to, you know, cook it right and, mm-hmm. and put it out there, and it exploded.
1990, Ghost, Total Recall, Die Hard 2, Dick Tracy, Back to the Future 3.
Wow. Okay.
Dick Tracy, maybe Summer Pass. Although
the reason it gets a pass is all its art design, which right. you have to give an A on.
Right.
You know, script and, you know, other elements, particularly pace as well, mm-hmm. is not particularly strong. But, you know, there's some good things in it, but I didn't think it was great when we saw it.
But that's the one I would cut out of those four. I think Ghost, you know, it becomes a chick flick after, you know, you see it a couple times, but...
Yeah, you know what? I was like one of the last guys to see fucking Ghost. I held out, but then I finally, it was like a first date with a new girl I was going to go out with, and like every sucker, it's like, let's go to the movies, and she's like, you haven't seen Ghost? It's like my favorite movie. We Ooh. Have to go see it. And so I'm thinking, well, okay. Well, I guess I finally got to give in now. Got to go see it.
Sucker.
So I finally saw Ghost. And you know what? I didn't hate it. It was fine. You
it's
know.
Fun. 1991, Terminator 2, Robin Hood, City Slickers, Naked Gun 2.5, Backdraft.
Okay.
Well, Robin Hood, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to make a great film out of it. It might not have reached its full potential, but I don't think they went in there trying to do Summer Dumbin'.
Right.
Having a blast.
Right.
Black Draft 2 has a whiff of, you know, trying to be, you know, a little bit more than just a bubblegum package.
Yeah.
Same thing for T2, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And City Slickers is, you know, it's entertaining. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I laughed when
sure.
I went to go see it.
Sure.
My dad and I laughed and laughed, so
mm-hmm.
I laughed the fact that he liked it so much. Yeah. So,
1992, Batman Returns, Lethal Weapon 3,
Pass.
Sister Act,
Pass,
A League of Their Own,
oh.
questionable, Unforgiven, which is perfectly good.
Yeah,
yeah, that was. 92, that's a rough year. 92 is kind of like 2007. Lethal Weapon 3 would be the Live Free or Die Hard of that year.
Yeah, definitely. The TV show on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Batman Returns when it came out. I saw it twice in the theater.
Sister Act,
I wasn't a big fan of, but a lot of people were. And it spawned a sequel, so for a lot of people, that movie worked.
1993, Jurassic Park. The Fugitive, The Firm, Sleepless in Seattle, In the Line of Fire.
Well, that's a pretty good quality slate of films. A lot of them you would still talk about today.
Yeah. 1994, Forrest Gump, The Lion King, True Lies, The Flintstones, Clear and Present Danger.
Any good review of The Flintstones is a pass. That thing is atrocious.
Yeah. Well, I think people, you know, that's your obvious, that's branding. And, you know, you think John Goodman as Fred.
I think it's a culprit is what it is. The fact that it made that much money is the reason movies are as bad as they are today. Right. I blame the Flintstones there in 94.
It's one of the, it's as we go over this list, that's one of the first ones that jumps out that's really like pretty damn disgusting and you know.
And it had the potential to not be that.
Right.
It had the potential to work. I would have preferred them just to film a live-action version of a complete episode rather than the mess that I saw.
Well, the point is that it went in there with branding ideology, which is the name of the game today. You know, they said, here's a product that people know, people love. We need to make a live-action film. That's what people want to see. And so that's what we're going to do. And I think that was the number one thing, was to get people in the seats, you know, first weekend. Just so that they could see.
It's a year after Jurassic Park, too, so we're still a little bit wowed by moving dinosaurs and digital effects of this new
level. Right, and hey, look, there's Dino, you know, in real life. How cool. 95, Batman Forever, Apollo 13, Pocahontas, Casper, Die Hard 3. Casper?
Kids movie, man.
But there you go. It's the same thing as Flintstones. It's the beginning of the end, you know. It's we're starting to see this morph now into more well, Batman Forever, that's
well, okay.
An obvious
brand. I
mean,
if you want to go on that level, Batman's a brand.
Right.
Casper's a brand. What else was there?
Die Hard 3.
Die Hard was a brand. What else? Mm-hmm.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas is...
It's a brand
Disney brand, what they were doing with their new animations, but okay.
But Apollo 13.
That was the one original. Yeah, that was the non-product branding film of that summer.
96, Independence Day, Twister, Mission Impossible, The Rock, and The Nutty Professor.
Pass. All the way down.
Yep.
Straight line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is a summer fluff right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, this is 11 years ago, so we're starting. I mean, it's amazing how you start to see the everything start changing. 1997, Men in Black, Lost World, Air Force One, My Best Friend's Wedding, and Face Off.
Huh. Yeah.
Men in Black, I mean, you know, I don't know. What do you call that? Lost World is a sequel, which was so...
It's not a great sequel, though, but I guess it delivered the quotient of what people wanted, but I think you're kind of... It's definitely in the C minus category.
Air Force One, What If John McClane Were the President?
That's your Die Hard movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a branding because it's its own thing.
But it's a
type. It's coming out of a genre brand.
Right. My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah. That's your original programming there.
And then Face Off, which was...
Yeah, you know, that was a high concept idea for an action movie.
98, Saving Private Ryan, Armageddon, Something About Mary, Dr. Doolittle, and Deep Impact.
You got your two asteroid movies.
Your two asteroid movies. You got your Spielberg film. Something About Mary was original and fun.
Well, and that was DreamWorks' thing, is we're going to put out our big, serious Oscar contender in summer.
Right.
We're going to break that trend because we want summer dollars for this film, a la Spielberg.
And it worked.
Even though its subject matter isn't typical, and I'll use that in quotes, of the summer movie mold. And really, in many ways, if you take away that opening 20-minute battle scene, it almost is. It could be just a really good summer movie. Hey, you roll the dice in the movie industry. Just because you're into an idea on the day you start shooting doesn't mean a year and a half later when your film comes out, or a year later, that everyone's going to be as enamored with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if you could get films out immediately, it could work out better because you could follow trends and pulses that
way. Well, the interesting thing with Private Ryan is that, like you said, they're trying to buck the whole idea of what a summer movie is. I mean, maybe that's a good thing. That was a good thing for the whole idea that it didn't just have to be dumb summer fare. But Armageddon was that way. I mean, my God, that movie's like getting hit in the face with a bat. Dr. Doolittle, forget it. You know, what a nightmare. Deep Impact I actually like, so, you know, but I know others didn't, so maybe I'm guilty there.
Well, and that movie's trying to put big ideas into a summer movie with Deep Impact. Mm-hmm. You know, melodramatic ideas, to be sure, but mm-hmm. yeah, not just trying to be a cartoon.
Well, that wasn't
like
trying to
Armageddon
be
Armageddon was.
Right, exactly. All right, let's go to 99. You know what was number one? Phantom Menace.
Okay. Pass. Puff, puff, pass.
Sixth Sense. The Spy Who Shagged Me. Tarzan and Big Daddy.
That's a big pass.
Big Daddy, the Sandler movies.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta. It's almost like that Sandler's the one that advances through the classes. Like, pass them, forget it. It's gonna make money anyway.
Yeah,
no sense griping.
Let's get into 2000s. MI2, Gladiator, Perfect Storm, X-Men, and Scary Movie. Scary Movie brand pass. MI2 is a brand, and I don't know.
MI2 is a big pass. It's not a good movie.
Horrible. Horrible.
It's horrible. That's a big pass.
Horrible.
That's right there. It's in the Rambo Dumb Club.
Yo, totally.
And it made money, so there you go. It shows you that in 2000 it could work.
But Gladiator, still. Here's Gladiator bucking that system.
I don't think so, though. I think Gladiator is just the good quality.
Gladiator could have come out at any time of the year.
It could have.
It worked fine.
But it came out in summer because it was the best time for box office for that movie.
Yeah, but then it went out and won Best Picture.
Yeah, but
totally
I don't think the day
the
it came out, that day in May, anybody, you won't find one critic that was talking Oscar about that movie.
Right.
When it came out in the theatrical. Mm-hmm. It only was later when the crop of movies that they selected to be in consideration, Gladiator just happened to be one of them. And look at the size and the scale and everyone who was involved and... There's a lot of 6 degrees from a lot of things that can get an Oscar to a movie like Gladiator. Specifically after American Beauty wins for DreamWorks a year earlier. There's just a machine in place. So forget all that. I think Gladiator is a summer movie. Okay. I felt that way when I did see it, in the fact that it plays like the kind of things we would go see in summer anyway. And... it has the biggest audience to appreciate it during that time.
Perfect Storm, I think you can kind of give a pass because what it does do is it's really about the effects. People wanted to see those waves. And that's what pulled them in for that
trailer. They tried to pull a story around it. You know, again, a little bit melodramatic. But I didn't much care for it. But, you know, it made a lot of money.
It's a Wolfgang Peterson water trilogy movie.
Man, I tell you, that guy just, he skates on thin ice, doesn't he? Yeah. I guess not with Poseidon, though. It finally cracked.
Yeah. X-Men, yeah, that's great. Great summer movie.
Yeah, that's a good, solid movie.
But don't you think that X-Men is good enough that it could have come out in September or October or November? Why not?
It could come out any time, of course.
Right.
But I would want it to come out in summer so we can get the biggest amount of turnover.
See, I'm trying to demystify the summer movie. You're all for
it. We've already done it.
You're all for
it. I think we've already made that point clear. But now once you've done that, now you've got a product to sell. And you can't forget that. But you put out X-Men in September. Are you willing to shave 20 or 30 million off your box office to make that bold move?
You really think that audiences are so set to see movies
in the summer? It's not so set. It's just there's different patterns. People are back into school. There's different sort of activities and different sort of mindsets going on. It doesn't mean that they won't go see it the opening weekend, but repeat business won't be the same.
So are you saying
as it would be in the summer?
So you're
saying, that's what I'm saying.
You're saying that the audience, that people out there watching films dictate when movies should come out, or are you saying that the studios dictate when people should go see movies? What is it? Because you're saying that people have patterns and they'll only see a certain movie in the summer.
These are older patterns too, because they're always changing now. Home theater and DVDs have changed movie going patterns drastically. But traditionally, and since we're going through our timeline, this was my line of thinking. Traditionally, the thinking was for a movie like this that you're aiming for a teenager audience, obviously. The summertime is going to give you the most amount of turnovers and viewings for that particular film. It's just programming. But I'm agreeing with you 100%. I think if it's a good film, it can also work. But after that, once you know it can work, it's like, okay, since we have a film that works, okay, we did it. All right, we overcame all the odds. We made a great film that works. Now we want to make money. Okay, when's the best time to release it? And then you evaluate.
But
you look at the competition. You see what else is coming out. And it's like, look, There was nothing else when Gladiator came out, right?
Right, but hold on, listen.
What, Battlefield Earth?
What you're describing, though, is let's make a good movie, and then let's decide when to release it. You know that's not the case anymore. Now, they've picked the date.
And then they find out what movie they want to fill it with.
Yeah, exactly. They pick the date 2 years ahead of time and say, we've got this release date 2 or 3 years in the future. Moving forward, 2001, get ready. Hold on. Shrek, Rush Hour 2, Mummy Returns, Pearl Harbor, Jurassic Park 3.
God, a lot of passes in there.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great slate.
I mean, I think Shrek at the time was probably still new enough.
I enjoyed it the first time I saw it. On repeat viewings, it got a little tired for me.
Rush Hour 2, pal. Mummy Returns, that's questionable. Pearl Harbor, well, we all know about that. Jurassic Park 3, boy, that's a big question because that's so on the edge, you know what I mean? It's so Jurassic Park, the TV series.
Well, and then you have Spielberg throwing AI out there that summer.
Mm.
His serious sci-fi film.
Right.
Again, bucking the notion of what a summer entertainment can be like. He'll do it again the next year with Minority Report.
Well, but people didn't really buy it because it's not in the top five.
Maybe AI would have been better in the fall then.
I don't know. Again, why are we defining movies by their release date? You know what I mean?
Because you get one shot with a movie.
2002, Spider-Man, Attack of the Clones, Signs, Goldmember, and Men in Black 2.
God, pass on Men in Black 2.
I wasn't
a big fan of Goldmember either, but it entertained a lot of people.
Goldmember was pretty
bad. It's all franchising, though.
Oh, all of it. Look at it. Well, not Signs.
Except for Signs.
Signs. But we were buying a M. Night Shyamalan film, so we knew what we were getting to a certain extent. Star Wars, of course.
And I wasn't a big fan of it. There's a lot of good things in it. I just think it's uneven.
Oh, I love Signs. Love it. Okay. And Spider-Man, obviously. Everyone knew what that was coming.
Clones?
Well, sure. I definitely give it a pass. I love it. You know, what can I say? I'm the sucker for that. You know. Pass. 2003, Finding Nemo, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Two quality entertainments right there.
Mm-hmm. Matrix Reloaded.
Franchise.
Bruce Almighty and X2.
Well, I think X2 was quality. Bruce Almighty, I didn't love.
Well, it was...
And Matrix Reloaded, I didn't love. But they were, you know, they filled the gap out there.
But every single movie there has got... It's a little bit about branding. Nemo is obviously unique, but it had the Pixar label on it, which everyone can pretty much trust at this point. Pirates, well, we knew that was a brand. Matrix, yes. Bruce Almighty was just a... It was a what's-his-name movie, and boy, everybody saw everything he could... At that point, he could poop on a plate and people would see it.
You ever wonder why the Pixar movies are so good?
They're just good, man. They make good movies.
I know why. I think I know when you sort of watch some of the features. It's because they basically make the film twice before they really start making the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they hone their script to such a degree, they record all the actors, and then they have storyboards. And they film them and cut the whole thing together. Also, you're just seeing a still frame on the screen, but you're still getting the lines. You know how long that shot lasts before it cuts to the next one. And then you involve the rough draft of that into, like, animatics or, you know, very rough versions of the animation, still using the voices and adding sound effects and music. So basically, you have a whole rough draft of your movie before you really bring in the voice talent, and then you really start animating it into, you know, the whole 3D world. So by making a film twice, you've learned an enormous amount of things about what works and what doesn't. Honing down every single scene, every shot, everything. Through the experience of making it, they've really found a way to make the best version.
Oh, man. What can you say? I mean, they've yet to let us down. I have not seen Ratatouille yet, but I can pretty much count on that. I know I'm going to get something good.
Their record is safe, that's for sure.
2004, Shrek 2, Spider-Man 2, Harry Potter, Azkaban, Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, now that's Is there a good review of that out there? I can't believe if there is. That's got to be like in the 20s or the teens on Rotten Tomatoes. I just watched that thing because you told me I had to see it.
Yeah, you have to see it to believe how freaking bad it is.
Oh, man, it was really bad.
And number five was Bourne Supremacy.
Okay.
Yeah. So what, you got two passes there, Shrek 2 and Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah, Shrek 2 I didn't think was very good at all.
Obviously,
Spider-Man 2. Okay, great. There's building a great summer blockbuster, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the franchise, but it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Bourne was a good, solid thriller.
Sure.
It certainly delivered, and it created a franchise, so it worked.
Now, do movies like Spider-Man 2, Shrek 2, and Harry Potter get an automatic pass just because they're...
Well, I think in Harry Potter, that was the third one in the series, and they brought in Alphonse Cuarón, and I think his talent is exploding in that film. It's in every single frame. So basically, you're hiring an artist to come into this pre-set world. I mean, obviously, the story is set,
because
you're basing it on the books. I mean, if anyone's going to improve upon the story, it'd probably be the original author, not just some screenwriter, you know, or some director. They're bringing themselves to something that is, in a way, like an assembly line, because, you know, Warner knows they got to make seven of them. They got to make them quick for the kids. You know, they're growing up. But, I like that film a lot. I think that's...
So then it doesn't get... It deserves what it made.
And I think it's interesting, though, because the Harry Potter films have been flipping from coming out in November, like the first two did, then Azkaban comes out during the summer. And then the fourth one comes out in November again. And the fifth one comes out during the summer. And the sixth one will come out next November. Now, I think that has more to do with them making it and when's the next best slot. Because obviously, the November and the summer are considered the best buckets.
Right.
For audiences. You know, you want those holidays. The holidays are key.
These big audience favorites can only come out in May or November.
I mean, if you want to try and maximize your profits in terms of what has been proven that audiences will take time to go to the movies.
Right, but Harry Potter could come out when it could come out on a Monday
in September,
and it would still be huge.
And it would. And I think it'll be smart for certain films that are brands to clear them. Because this whole summer runway of every week trying to drop two or three blockbusters is killing.
That was so
audiences
ridiculous.
Cannot go every week to catch all this.
That's what was so ridiculous about this summer is they just lined them up. Wham, 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 wham.
And since they control the programming, they could own themselves September. They could turn September into August Part 2. August can be considered the dump month of summer, but it's been getting some prestige because some bigger films have been coming out in the last few years in August that do really well. I agree. We should keep films running through August and September.
Well, again, I ask you the question. Is it that studios that control when people see movies, or is it the studio trying to pander?
Of course the studios control, because they set when they want to put it out, and they have done their research. They have hordes of teams of people telling them when is the best possible time to put this movie out to get the maximum amount of profits, and so you can dip the DVD by the end of the year.
Right, that's really what we're talking about here. Yeah, you're right. Let's squinch it all
into 1 year. Go back to Batman.
Right.
They started it all. The fact that you could buy that tape in October and you saw it in June 26th, that was huge. And it was sell-through. I mean, you went out and got your $9.99 copy.
Sure.
So, yeah, I know. I mean, it changed everything. So, what's next?
2005, Star Wars Revenge of the Sith, War of the Worlds.
Pass.
Wedding Crashers, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and Batman Begins.
Definitely quality on that last one.
I think it's a pretty good year. I mean, I think, I would pass on War of the Worlds myself. I think Wedding Crashers is okay.
It's okay.
I like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That was a big surprise for me that year because I refused to see it in the theater.
Don't you love that when you're wrong?
I love it when I'm wrong.
Good?
I love it when I'm wrong.
Yeah.
2006, Pirates of the Caribbean 2, Dead Man's Chest, Cars, X-Men The Last Stand. The Da Vinci Code. Superman Returns. Really, and a lot of people didn't
And they're trying. The thing is, though, is, again, they're trying to make something out of Superman that's not just moronic, slap your head stupid.
Okay? Right, right.
You know, I think they're trying to do fun and big things in Pirates. It's just, it needs the third film, I think, to really... It's hard to review the second film without the third film, I think.
Right.
You really got to look at them together because they kind of go together.
Yeah, by itself, it's kind of disjointed.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, but Cars, hey, that's another strong Pixar, absolutely.
It's another Pixar. I mean, it's probably the weakest Pixar.
But isn't that sad that the last 2 years, what we're seeing is out of those top five, we have one movie that we say doesn't get the summer pass. You know? 2007, back to 2007, Spidey 3, pass.
Pass.
Shrek the Third,
pass.
Pirates 3.
Okay, I'm gonna let it go through.
All right, Transformers.
Pass.
Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
It's like a good 3-star film.
Yeah, but does it get a pass because it's a Harry Potter film? If this was the first Harry Potter movie that came out, would you be giving it a pass? Like they skipped the other books and they've just said, this is the one we need to make now.
If I had not read the books, I would rate the films a lot lower than I do. It's impossible for me to look at them anymore because I saw the first two films without reading the books. Mm-hmm. So all the stuff after that, I knew the material going in. So I know what struck me emotionally about what was in the stories in the books. And when they're not included in the film, and it's traded off for spectacle, which happens in movies, I feel there's a misbalance. I feel like, you know, the author goes to a lot of pains to develop characters and relationships and emotional growths and arcs. And when it's missing from Order of the Phoenix for two of the major characters, Hermione and Ron, to me, it's a missed opportunity. Does Harry's story need Ron and Hermione's growth? Well, I would argue yes, but obviously they felt differently. I think it's a Cliff Notes version of the book, but for the longest book to make the shortest film, I feel like they're playing it out to the marketplace. They're throwing it out in summer at the height of Pottermania to maximize the profits for it and to double dip the DVD at the end of the year. And, you know, they streamlined it to make sure that it could play all over. And a lot of Potter fans are giving it a pass, to tell you the truth. And as a fan of the novels, I wouldn't do that. I think the film underachieves while being good. And you don't put a cast together like that film. In scenes, you have, you know, Gary Oldman and Alan Rickman and, you know, David Thewlis. You've got all of these really heavyweight actors. And there's just so much more that the story gives them to do that the films choose not to. So, yeah, I do think it's a pass from the novel universe.
Okay, well, that's cool. Now, looking over the list from 80 to 2006 to see if we're seeing any change here, I think there's a little bit of this and that. I think, for the most part, you are seeing big change. Okay, let's just go through this. 1980, we just said Blue Lagoon. Nothing in 81. Nothing in 82 gets a summer pass. 83, we said yes to Jedi and to Staying Alive. But Jedi, that's debatable. Just, you know, because it's a Star Wars movie. But,
Spinner.
All right, yes.
Spinner.
Okay, you're right. 1984, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, that's one. 85, one with Rambo. 86, none, unless you count Top Gun.
You should count Top Gun.
All right, well, all right, Top Gun, 86. 87, Beverly Hills Cop 2, just one. 88, one with Crocodile Dundee 2. 89, one with Ghostbusters 2, unless you want to count Batman as a pass.
You probably should.
Okay, well then two. 1990, nothing. 91, nothing. 92, Lethal Weapon 3 and Sister Act. So that's two. I mean, that was 92. 93, no passes. 94, The Flintstones. So that's one. 95, Casper, that's one. 96 is a really bad year. All five movies get a pass. ID4, Twister, Mission Impossible 1, The Rock, and Nutty Professor. So that was a really awkward year. 97, one pass to Lost World. 98,
we give them to Armageddon and to Dr. Doolittle. 99, we give it to Phantom Menace and Big Daddy. And maybe even to Spy Who Shagged Me.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I thought Tarzan was a good movie. I would not give that a pass. 2000, we're going to give it to MI2 and to Scary Movies. That's two. So we're getting, you know, at least two regular here now. 2001, we got three that get a summer pass. Rush Hour 2, Pearl Harbor, and Jurassic Park 3. Mummy Returns is debatable. 2002, we gave passes to Attack of the Clones, Signs, and...
Mummy Returns is not debatable. That's a pass. That's a piece of crap.
Which one?
Mummy Returns.
Oh, okay. All right.
You like it?
I don't know. I barely remember it. I remember it being, you know, somewhat okay. All right. Well, then let's count it. Let's count it. Okay, then that's four passes. 2002, you wanted to give Signs a pass. I don't. Attack of the Clones, again, you want to give it that. I don't. But, you know, then again, it's a Star Wars movie, so it kind of does get an automatic pass. Men in Black 2, I somewhat like it. And then Gold Member gets a pass, I would probably say. So, and then Spider-Man's the only one that doesn't, so that's four.
That's four passes.
So four passes for 2001, four passes for 2002. 2003, we've got Matrix Reloaded and Bruce Almighty getting a pass, so that's two. 2004, we got Shrek 2 and Day After Tomorrow getting a pass, so that's two. 2005 was a good year. We only have one pass, which is War of the Worlds, because we were good with Sith, Wedding Crashers, Chocolate Factory, and Batman Begins. 2006, all five movies get a pass. No. Cars doesn't. Cars is the lone out.
Yeah, it's another four-pass summer. And then this summer is another four- or five-pass summer.
Well, and this summer is what we have is a four-pass for Spidey 3, Shrek the 3rd, Transformers, and Harry Potter. But Pirates 3 is the debatable one.
Yeah, Pirates, I'm going to give it. I'm going to let it slide.
Well,
right
let it slide because of our personal taste, but a lot of other people didn't like it.
So really... We probably should get a pass. It is all five. The general consensus is it's a 0-5 summer.
So what I'm trying to say here is that when we look at the entire thing, starting in about 96, we start seeing this decline to where you're seeing movies that don't have... I mean, again, all movies are... You know, whether you like them or not is up to individual people.
Hey, these are the money makers. Come on, we're not talking about all the other good films that didn't make money that happened to come out that summer.
Right.
I mean, Sex, Lies, and Videotape came out the summer of 89.
Right. But, you know, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the movies that made the most money and what kind of quality are we looking at. And if we look at the timeline over the last however many years that we went over here, it shows that by the when we get to today, you're seeing movies coming out that are making massive amounts of money. That really are they going to have a place on your shelf? Are they going to have a place?
Well, they're going to have a place on people's shelves because they'll buy them. What's the replayability of them, though, is the true question.
Right. When people ask you what's your favorite movies, are you going to, you know, are people going to say, "Oh, Live Free and Die Hard"? That was my favorite movie. My favorite movie was The Da Vinci Code. It's movies that are making money because why? Well, they're branded, obviously, for the most part. Most all of them are branding. And that's what's getting us into the theater. Not the fact if it's a good movie or not. You know, and it just happens to be that it's all in the summertime.
And it just goes back to what we echoed on an earlier show is it doesn't have to be that way because if you do make a quality film, you'll still get the audience, you'll still get the opening weekend and everything else. And... you'll have something it'll play on the shelf. And the problem is again, it's the release date. It's the compressed production schedule. It's the, you will be in theaters 364 days from today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go write the script, you know.
Right.
And then, you know, go start pre-production. And we better start working on the effects. And if they're not photorealistic by 2 weeks before the release date, guess what?
Yeah.
Too bad. You're going to have some cruddy effects in your movie because
right.
We got to get this thing out. There's too much corporate money behind it. So I think as long as that kind of thinking goes into movies, it's going to be harder and harder to produce great work in it. It doesn't mean it can't be done. I don't know what the Bourne ultimatum schedule was like.
Mm-hmm.
It does prove that you can make a quality film, still release it in summer, and have the cake, eat it too, and have the best of all worlds.
Right. Absolutely. Well...
I don't know. This is really a fascinating phenomenon. You know, the studios have created this time when they tell us you have to go to movies now. And they try to get us in the theater with whatever means they can. And you know, the method of today is branding. We know that's the big hurdle that we've got to get over eventually. But
we blame the mainstream critics, right, for most of this pass. Because they're the first line.
Well, that's
before
true.
Before it even gets to the audience.
It's true. Well, and that's the deal, is that there's two people we're looking at here. We're looking at mainstream critics, but we're also looking at cultural. You know, what are people saying about these movies, you know? And there's a whole gaggle of people out there that are saying, yeah, Transformers. Most of them grew up with the toys.
Well, do people take, like, what's his name on Ain't It Cool? Harry Knowles, seriously, as a critic? I mean, he gave Spider-Man 3 a huge pass, didn't mm-hmm. he?
Well, I kind of gave Spider-Man 3 a pass, too. I was kind of bad at that, you know? If you go back and listen to our show, I'm guilty, man. You know what? I can go back. I went back and listened to the Spider-Man 3 show, and I will tell you that I personally am guilty of everything I'm talking about here, and it just took me a while to figure out what the hell I was doing.
Because, I had an advantage. I had seen it twice.
Well, but I was throwing... If you listen to what I'm saying, and you can get to that, to the Spider-Man 3 review on our special edition page... But really what I was saying was shut up, don't think, and enjoy the effects. And really, after seeing the same thing happen all summer to other films, seeing Transformers, seeing Die Hard, it's just like, enough. Now, I'm still guilty on Fantastic Four because I came out saying I kind of enjoyed Fantastic Four. But it was kind of like compared to the last raging piece of shit that the first Fantastic Four is, this movie's okay.
And that's watchable.
That's part of this dumbing down. That's part of this brainwashing, is that we say, well, compared to the first one, this one rocks. That doesn't mean anything. That's like saying, well, this piece of dog shit tastes way better than that piece of dog shit. That doesn't mean it's a good piece of dog shit. It still means that you're eating dog shit. I don't know. I think it's interesting, but I personally want this whole summer movie tag to just... it's not going anywhere, folks. But I would love to see it demystified and broken down because, you know, if you're going into production saying, we're making a summer movie, I mean, you're really not giving yourself an out. You're saying, we're going to develop this movie. We're going to, you know, this is all about programming for the teenager to fit into the fact that he's not in school this summer. You know, it's like, well, we're going to make a movie. We're going to spend millions of dollars to make a movie to get that teenager who's not in school right now to go see it and to see it again and to buy the soundtrack and the book and the
and to tell his friends that they got to go see it.
They got to go see it. And
he goes and sees it again with them.
So I think really, I mean, it comes down to what I've said a million times before. This is the creation of product. This is not filmmaking for the sake of filmmaking, for the love of it. Whatever. We're all guilty of it.
All films have a barcode, okay?
Absolutely.
And they all need to be released in the marketplace to make the maximum amount of profits.
Right.
Just like if you were releasing a book. Mm-hmm. You know, why is the Harry Potter book coming out during the summer? And it also happened with a lot of books. They all noticed that book sales went up during summer. Why? Because people had time to read. So, of course, a lot of books became bestsellers during, you know, the summer, buying period. Right. So there's certainly something to be said about the cycle and seasons, but I agree completely. It can always be broken.
Right.
I mean, when Hannibal opens up to $60 million in February, it says anything goes.
Right, exactly, you know? Exactly.
So it's a cautious game. I mean, you're it's easy to say, oh, you're just, you know, playing around with a $100 million movie, but it's a $100 million movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's a chess piece you're moving, and you better make sure it's in the right spot and you've thought about all your moves, because you could get wiped out fast. Mm-hmm. Look at Evan Almighty, wiped out fast.
That was the big destroyed movie this summer.
We were wondering which one it was going to be.
That was the Poseidon.
Something had to fall.
That was the Poseidon of this summer, absolutely. All right, as we wrap all this up, I want to leave you with a couple of more quotes here. Now, I want to tell you this. Check these names out. Richard Roper, Roger Ebert, and the following newspapers: USA Today, Washington Post, Philadelphia Inquirer, Arizona Republic, Boston Globe, Variety, Dallas Morning News, Village Voice, Denver Post, Wall Street Journal, Toronto Star, the San Francisco Chronicle, and Entertainment Weekly all gave the Transformers movie a positive review.
Goodness.
That's some big names right there. Okay.
So when they're watching the acting in the movie, they're okay with it because it's a cartoon?
I guess.
When they're seeing the lame masturbation joke and all the other silliness, they're just saying, oh, that's okay because it's for kids?
Or the effects wipes out the everything. Go back to the quotes that we were talking about that we did at the beginning of the show. Those quotes we picked because it's people acknowledging this movie is stupid, but I loved it. That's the essence of what we're talking about with Summer Pass, the check your brain at the door. If you want to keep checking your brain at the door, you know, on and on, I've said this before, we're moving toward Idiocracy. We're moving toward that future where all movies are so freaking dumbed down that you're going to have to search hard and fast, because you know what? This summer thing can just grow. I mean, it can be a cancer. Its borders can get expanded. We've seen the summer season expand into April and expand into late August. You know, who's to say this can't just expand across the entire plate of films? We're going to start seeing bigger movies come out in earlier in the year, in March. Isn't Iron Man coming out in February?
No.
Is that a summer movie?
Out, I think it's the beginning of May.
Okay, well then there you go.
But Roland Emmerich's new 10,000 BC is like in March or April.
Right, so you're going to start seeing this happening. And who's to say that that's not the ultimate plan? It's just that this summer season has become the whole year long and that we're going to get nothing but this dumbed down stuff. I mean, that's something to think about 10 years out from now, folks. Not today, but 10 years out from now.
Well, they always like to look at, like, you know, different President's Day weekend or, you know, Easter weekend, a certain sort of holiday or, you know, 3-day weekend, that kind of thing. Because people might be more enticed to go out to see that new blockbuster thing that came out. But did it help Grindhouse?
No.
So, I don't know. It's just the movie business is too unpredictable. Audiences are too unpredictable. I think the funnel is getting narrower. I think a lot of people have caught on. And they realize that, hey, that looks like something I like to go see in the spectacle of a big screen. And they're going to go do it. I mean, think about The Simpsons and what it was like to sit in an audience with a bunch of people laughing.
Right.
I mean, and all for all different parts of the theater at different things. That's something you don't get when you're watching it at home, even if you watch it with your family.
But still, you know, let's be honest. As fun as The Simpsons movie was, I was still watching a television show at the movie theaters.
Well, sure you were.
Exactly. So, Summer
Just
Pass.
Just in widescreen.
Summer Pass. Doesn't matter if it's good or not. It's an automatic because it's a television. It's a TV show.
Well, the question is was it a good movie or not?
Yeah, it was fine.
Regardless if it was a TV show or not, was it a good movie?
Yeah, it was fine.
Okay.
Wasn't great. It wasn't
They
awful.
Didn't make a bad movie.
No way.
So, that's all that mattered in terms of what they were doing.
Right.
They didn't make, like, Dragnet, right?
Right.
You know, they didn't make
Car 54, Where Are You?
Car 54, Where Are You? You know,
the Beverly Hillbillies.
there's a lot of other precedents that could have been a lot worse, I guess, you know, for them. And, you know, obviously, there's an audience for it that will pay to go see The Simpsons on the big screen.
Right.
They get it free.
Right.
And even with ratings down on The Simpsons, they'll still go out and pay to see it. Now, what does that tell you? The ratings are down on the show, but it has a blockbuster opening weekend.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
I don't.
They don't want it for free. They want to go pay.
It's branding. That's all I can think of it. They've been trained to go see that they want to see a bigger version of what they're used to. And I think ultimately that's what will hurt the film from becoming a monster mega hit, is that it doesn't offer much more than the television show. As funny as it is, it just says, we're going to do what we've always done and make you laugh. And they do that perfectly. But they're not trying to, you know, make it some big, massive, different thing. But I think that's what people expect when they go see a television version.
It's the wrong expectation probably to have anyway.
Of course it is.
But what do we expect from summer movies? Maybe if Simpsons would have came out in the fall, we wouldn't expect that.
You're maybe right.
I don't know. I just know when the new Santa Claus comes out in November...
Or Halloween in August?
Halloween in August. God.
We have to get it in. We have to get it in in the summer movie season.
It helped Clerks 2 so well last year.
Yeah.
That got lost in the crowd. Yeah. Again, you bump that a month or two, that's Star Trek syndrome again.
Yeah.
I don't know if necessarily the season you put in, while it's important, it's more of what's around you.
Right.
What's coming out the week before and what comes out the week after? That's the most important factor of when you should release your movie.
Right.
What types of movie? You know, you don't release the same type of movie 2 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
if you got a football movie, you don't want to come out the week after a football movie.
Right.
You just don't want to do that.
Right.
And if you have a football movie, you probably want to come out in September, October.
Yeah.
Or at least when football's going on. Mm-hmm. You don't want to come out in baseball season.
Right.
So I completely see the programming aspect. But the most important thing is, what is your competition?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a type of movie, a romantic comedy, and three other romantic comedies have come out, maybe
right.
there needs to be a buffer before another one comes out. Or maybe you need to ride the train and be this month's mm-hmm. romantic comedy, because there's a pattern of people going to see one of them each month. So
right.
you've got to take all this in consideration. A lot of people make a lot of money doing nothing but thinking about this stuff all day long.
That's great.
That's all they do. And they analyze and reanalyze and they run data figures and they have test groups. And it's just madness. It's a complete cottage industry into itself.
Check this out. I'm going to shut this down with some great, my favorite words that I've heard on Transformers, okay? Knowing what we think of it.
What's up, bitches?
Transformers delivers the thrills we've been waiting for all year long.
It's the A-ticket ride of the summer. Oh, wait. No, the E-ticket ride of the summer.
You ready for this? Transformers is better than sex.
Yeah, when you're a virgin.
Or you've been humping your pillow or something. You're nailing the tree hole outside. Okay, fine. I get it then. Who are you having sex with, man? Your grandma? Yeah, better than sex with your grandma.
You and your grandma's boy.
No.
Yeah, right.
All right, and then this was my favorite of all. Bay has crafted. Now, granted, these are actual critical statements. Bay has crafted one of the best action movies of all time.
All time. We're talking, what, Millie's D.W. Griffith forward to right now. There's been none better.
All time.
Forget Wild Bunch. Forget all of the Leone Peckinpah or John Woo.
Original Die Hard.
Any of that canon.
Lethal Weapons.
It has been all surpassed now. Even B-13, forget it.
Aliens. Yeah, exactly. This is the...
Yeah, even better than Aliens in T2 and
yeah.
Terminator. All that.
All better.
Road Warrior has been surpassed now.
By the Transformers.
Okay.
Boy, take your narrow vision of cinema and see some movies, Jack, because you're missing out somewhere. That's all I can say.
Either that or tune into the Hollywood Saloon.
That's right.
We are here to help.
There you go, folks. The Summer Pass. Delivered up to you cold. Don't give movies passes. Yeah, you're going to see them. I know. We do, too. We're suckers. Man, I just hope it's something that... I hope we can reverse this trend. I don't know how it's going to happen. I hope that maybe just people get sick of it and start vomiting at the fact that this is all we're getting over and over and over again.
Well, you know how to guarantee there won't be another Grindhouse movie?
Mm-hmm.
When the first one flops.
Yeah.
So. You know how I can guarantee there won't be another Almighty?
When this one flopped.
When no one goes to see the second one.
There you go.
So yes, we the people, we have a voice.
Right.
It will be heard, and heard loudly in the halls of Hollywood.
Yep. Just don't show up.
You know, they PG-13'd out Die Hard, and it still made more money.
Oh.
So they were right. But had we, you and I, stuck to our guns and not seen it, would it have made a difference? Probably not. It would have taken a lot more.
God.
But that's the whole thing, you know? They win.
I avoided it for a long time, and then I finally gave in. Sucker!
You know why you gave in, though? Because you started reading all of these reviews saying, hey, you know what? It's pretty good.
Right.
I was surprised.
Or here's...
Better
here's,
than you expect.
Here's the ultimate bad summer pass line. People say, it's not that bad.
Not that bad. Mm-hmm. Which is another way of saying it's not that good.
Exactly.
It's the glass half empty, half full.
That's
argument.
What I want people to tell me when I ask them, say, what'd you think about that movie? Oh, wasn't that bad. Well, great. I'll go see it.
That's like walking up to a pile of shit that someone threw perfume on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how does it smell? Well, it's not that bad.
Not so bad. That's got to change, man.
Just don't step in it.
If that's your threshold for going to see a movie, you need to buck up, man. You need to, like, get a little more critical and stop this silliness because...
Well, no, I don't know if you have to get more critical. And I just... The thing is it's this insane amount of hype around these things because we talk about the numbers. And
right.
they're all thrown out there. It's like, well, Transformers made this amount. It must be good.
Right.
Harry Potter made this amount. It must be good. No, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Old argument, echo chamber all over again.
Sure.
But let's just get some perspective here. There's nothing wrong with being nostalgic about Transformers or being nostalgic about Batman. But if it's a crappy movie, it's a crappy movie.
Exactly.
I'm a big fan of Speed Racer. And I'm first in line next year when the film comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm ready to love it.
Because
I've been waiting to see a live-action Mach 5 my whole life.
Right.
I'm probably going to get a CGI version. But in any case, if it's a great movie, yeah, I'll scream from the rooftops.
Right.
But if it sucks, well, ditto.
Yeah, scream.
I'm going to call it like I see it. What else can you do? You know, you want all movies to be Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? You want them to all be great. To where the moment you see it, you want to see it again, like you felt after Casino Royale.
Well, that's the point. I want to walk out of a movie saying, that was good, not, it wasn't that bad.
I don't mind not that bad when I rent a movie.
Sure.
Or watch it on cable or something.
That's fine.
It's funny how that scale changes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like it's somewhat acceptable if it's not that bad when it was only like a DVD rental or whatnot. But something about going out, but it's the same thing about seeing a live band or going to a live play or anything of that nature. You're putting more into it.
Right.
And you expect more. And considering what you're paying, I don't think you're wrong.
My name is Wesley. You may know me as the Kid Reviewer on the Hollywood Saloon forums. I'm going to get the show over and out of the way so you can listen to more. If you want to know more about the show, go to www.hollywoodsaloon.com. You can email the Hollywood Saloon at hollywoodsaloon@yahoo.com. If you come to the website, you can visit the forums and get into the discussion. Also, you can go to the special edition and rough cut pages if you want to know more episodes from the show. If you want something else to do on the website, you can do the listener map. It has everybody that loves the show, and you can meet other people. You can donate. You can give us money. Well, that's it for the show. See you next time. Stupňovité a plynulé transport.
You're listening to the Hollywood Saloon.